Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much to those of you who have bought the book. It's landed and I've already got some lovely feedback and some great reviews on Amazon. So I'm so grateful to you. Please keep them coming. I really appreciate it. It's called Happy, Healthy, Sober, Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life. And just before I get into talking more about that, I just want to say that it's Valentine's Day, isn't it, this weekend? Well, I don't know when you're listening to this, but it's Sunday, obviously, and I'm really, really conscious this year that people are just, there's quite a lot of people who are quite lonely, and you know, I don't know, I've just noticed that young people as well are, whereas they would normally be out and about doing stuff, seeing people they love, or even just their girlfriends or their you know, their mates kind of thing. You know, I just noticed it with my own teenagers. That this year it's obviously, you know, no one's seeing anyone and no one's going out anywhere. And I just think we have to throw the emphasis, take the emphasis away from the whole commercialized Valentine's Day thing and just bring that emphasis back to love and self-love and self-esteem. And if you still think that's woo-woo and ridiculous, well, ditch the booze. And then you probably won't. You know, the more work I do in this area, the more people I coach one-to-one, the more I realise that, you know, it really is the kind of root of so much. So many of our destructive behaviours, so much of what we do is you know, the layers that we put around ourselves, the protection that we put around ourselves, because we don't think we're enough. And, you know, I've said many times that I've been in this arena for years, and yet it didn't strike me that I didn't mean this for myself. I didn't accept it for myself. It takes a while, but I definitely think that when you ditch the booze, when you're able to catch sight of that better life without alcohol, then you do start to get a sense of who you are. Hopefully start to like yourself a bit. And that's the first step. So maybe for Valentine's Day, just think of it as, you know, being self-love curious. Start with self-care, you know, start with the little things, because that's what makes a difference. When things really do feel tough, then that's what makes the biggest difference of all, really. Just taking care of yourself as you would someone you really do love. And most of us don't do that when we're drinking. We're too busy just to want to go and get the next drink to actually remember to take care of ourselves. And the joke of it is, of course, we think that the booze is the self-care. It sure is not. I thought what I would do today, as my book is released, I've got the opportunity to be on the other side of the mic with a few things I'm doing. I've been on a couple of other podcasts, which is great. I'm on talk radio on Sunday nights. That's fun. And so obviously I'm kind of doing bits and bobs about the book. And I thought, well, why not share that with you guys? Because yeah, because if I had a co-host, I would be doing that, right? So I thought I'd invite someone to interview me. I thought I'd kind of turn the mic around and let someone ask me the questions that they want to ask. We haven't done any prep for this, so so she might be quite hard on me. I don't know. But anyways, I thought I would allow Pam Francis, who is an interviewer, to turn the mic to me. Here you go. So we've got something a little bit different for you today, because I thought that as my book had come out, I didn't want to just kind of talk at everybody. So I thought it'd be quite nice to have a chat with another interviewer who can kind of fire some questions at me. So I'm so thrilled, Pam, that you've agreed to do this. Pam Francis is a celebrity interviewer of, goodness, you've been doing it for 30 years or something, haven't you, Pam?
Many, many.
You've been doing it for a good few years. So I'm terribly sorry that we can't meet in a lovely hotel and I can pretend to be a celeb. but I really appreciate you being willing to ask me some questions. Just before we do that, you're going to have to share a couple of celeb stories of some of the famous, amazing people you've interviewed.
Oh, my goodness. Where do I start? Well, I think people always ask me who my favourites are. And I think it has to be Joanna Lumley.
Yeah, she is lovely, isn't she? I've met her.
adorable. Mm. And she makes everybody that she meets feel like the most important person in her world.
She does. It's so true. True. Yeah.
Lots and lots of others. I mean, Joan Collins, the Duchess of York, the wonderful Barbara Windsor.
She was lovely, wasn't she?
I get to do things like go on set of TV shows being made, like Downton Abbey.
Oh, that must be fun.
Years ago, and Coronation Street. And over the years, I've interviewed many, many. Mm. And my favourite is Joanna. Mm.
Yeah, lovely. Perfect. Okay, well, you got little me so far away.
I will. Well, first of all, Janie, congratulations.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Pam. I mean, we should say we know each other because you're also, have had your own little sober journey. So you might want to share little bits of that as well, you know.
Oh, sure. Well, it was because I read that you were writing a book that I did a little bit of research, and I thought, oh, I think I want to interview Janie about this because it's an interesting story. Mm. I know your book is actually part of a huge growing genre of books called Quitlet, which tackle the subject of giving up alcohol, and lots of them are memoirs about rock bottoms and terrible journeys to sobriety. But yours is not like that. I've read it and it certainly isn't. So who have you written this book for, Janie?
Mm. Well, I often say, and I'm sure I've said it in the book, I can't actually remember, that was my lockdown project, but of course you can't remember everything you've written. But I guess that I would have said what I said in my TEDx talk, which is that I believe that certainly in the UK, we've all been brainwashed into thinking that there are two types of drinkers. There are those at rock bottom who clearly need alcohol services and rehabilitation. And you know, I was not in that position at all. I didn't identify with that in any way. And then there's everyone else, and everyone else is perfectly okay. And I wasn't that either. I was waking up really very unhappy with the life I was living and who I was becoming. So I was what we now know, the term is grey area drinker. I was a grey area drinker. I wasn't dependent, but I wasn't okay either. And I have written the book for grey area drinkers, for those people who are not clinically dependent and at rock bottom, but they're not 100% okay. And how much they're drinking, in a way, doesn't matter, because it's this question that I want people to ask themselves, which is, could my life be better physically and emotionally without the booze? And if the answer to that is yes, then, you know, that's who I've written the book for. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk more about it, but of course, the book, I've written the book for people who are sober curious and day one grey area drinkers, but also for people who've been sober for years, because of course it's all the health and well-being stuff as well.
Yes, and I mean, the term grey area drinking was very new to me, and I'm sure it will still be new to quite a few people. Mm-hmm. But I resonated with it as soon as I heard it, and I just wondered, as well as you coach as well, don't you? You coach one to one people who are grey area drinkers. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I first came across this term, as most people did, I think, when Jolene Park was the person who coined it. You know, Jolene is a very well-known coach in the States, and she spoke about grey area drinking. She did a TEDx talk and came up with this kind of concept, if you like, and really identified that grey area drinkers are often people who can stop. You know, they have stopped. Most grey area drinkers will say to you, well, I know I'm not addicted. I know I'm not clinically dependent because I stopped when I had my children, or I stopped for a month, you know, a couple of years ago, or I stopped for a week, or, you know, a whole range of ways of expressing why they aren't dependent, because they aren't. But nevertheless, they're caught in this trap. And I then used the term in my TEDx talk, you know, and I said, it's a spectrum, and there are many, many different shades of grey, and none of them sexy, because I do believe that, you know, it is a spectrum of different shades of grey. But I genuinely believe that we need to step off the booze elevator before it hits the bottom, you know. So that's my understanding of grey area drinking. And then I trained to become a grey area drinking recovery coach. which a lot of the training was to add to the sort of health coaching I already did. I'm already a EFT practitioner and NLP, and I wanted to add this piece in because it focuses a lot on the kind of brain chemistry. And I think it's the brain chemistry piece that really has to be looked at and that often gets forgotten about, actually.
The first part of the book is very much about yourself and your own experience with alcohol. And I just wondered if you could sort of fill us in a little bit on your background and what part alcohol played in your life. Because you had quite a rock and roll lifestyle at one point.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I was a backing singer and I had my own tracks out. I didn't start drinking too early, thankfully, otherwise it would have been disastrous, but certainly early 20s. And I think to begin with, I was what you would call a normal drinker. And then, as you say, I did a lot of touring with bands. I toured the world with Wham and George Michael and many other bands. And then I had my own hit record. And throughout all of those years, alcohol was everywhere. You know, it was everywhere. It was in every dressing room. It was everywhere. It was always free. And there was always as much of it as you wanted. But what was quite interesting, now I look back, was that I obviously did have an off switch at that point. I was able to not overdo it. There were a couple of occasions where I might have overdone it, but mostly I didn't. And so I must have had some kind of off switch. And also, when I look back, what's interesting is that I never touched the drugs, even though they were everywhere. Now, of course, we know alcohol is a drug, but back then I didn't think of it like that. I thought, oh, you know, look at all these guys and girls in the bands that I was in, all, you know, all on the cocaine, all on the weed. And why didn't I do that? Because I was terrified of losing control. Absolutely terrified. That's the only reason. There's no other reason. I'm not holier than thou. Trust me, I was offered it many times and I had a very strong sense of self-preservation, if you like, and this feeling that I didn't have a particularly secure background. So this was all I had. This work was all I had. And I had a sense that if I lose control and let this go, the game is up. Right? I had very little self-esteem and self-worth, even though on the outside I was very confident, of course. But I had a sense that if I took any of those drugs, the game would be up. And yet alcohol didn't seem like a drug because obviously it's legal and it's the societal glue that sticks everything together. So I drank when everyone else drank. But then the drinking really ramped up when I had my own home much later and had my kids. And my kids were young. And that's when it really ramped up because then I saw it as something different. I saw it as a treat to make me feel grown up again after an exhausting day.
So what was it that made you think, hang on a minute, this is not okay. I need to do something about this.
Well, that took years. It took years before I got to that point. I was drinking pretty much every day for absolutely years. You know, my oldest son is 22. And really from practically day one, the booze was the answer. You know, it was mummy's little helper. You know, I mean, we know there's a huge industry around the mummy wine culture. It terrifies me now to think about it. But, you know, then when I had another child and then if ever we had any help, if ever we had a au pair or anyone who could look after the kids, that was like my license to, oh, my goodness, amazing. I can leave the kids with someone who cares about them and I can go and be grown up and have my self-care. You know, the irony of it is hilarious, actually. But that's when it really, really ramped up. And then it took a long time before I could see that it was an issue. Interestingly enough, I remember that about 12 years ago, 10, I went on a juice retreat, went on one of Jason Vale's juice retreats. I've done several of them. And I remember that the first one I went on was about 10, 12 years ago. And during this week-long detox, I felt so amazing. So I wasn't putting any toxins in my body. Obviously, no alcohol, nothing. Wasn't having food either. But while I was there, I read a copy of Jason's book, Kick the Drink Easily, and it just completely kind of hit me. And I thought, wow. So you know, I've had this week of feeling amazing. And why would I want to put alcohol in my body? It's just a toxin and I feel really healthy and well. So I'm just not going to do that anymore. So I came back from the juice retreat and didn't drink. And it was super easy, really. I didn't, you know, I didn't really think about it. I was really focused on my health and well-being, really focused on my juicing and my raw food. I was into all of that for a while. And I suppose it was 6 months down the line that I went to a party or something and somebody offered me champagne. That was what was on offer. That was the only thing on offer. And I can remember the thought process as if it was yesterday. You know, the thought process was, oh, well, I haven't actually had any alcohol for 6 months. So obviously I've got this. It's not a problem for me. I'm not going to overdrink. Why would I overdrink? Of course, I'd like a glass of champagne. It's what everyone does when they celebrate. And obviously I can just have one. Where's the problem? So I took my glass of bubbly and that was the beginning of the slippery slope again.
You were back on the booze elevator.
Back on the elevator, but this time even more so, of course. So, and I now know, in case anyone's thinking, well, okay then, so you stopped for a while, you went back to it. What was different this time?
Yeah.
And I now know that the thing that was massively different this time was that I knew the logic, the pain point, the reasons why I needed to stop, because I was waking at 3 a.m. I was bloated. I felt terrible. I felt such a sense of foreboding about getting older and anxiety. But the interesting piece was that I'd also caught sight of a better life without any, which I had never contemplated before that. So that was the difference. Did that answer the question? Sorry, yes. I went off on one there.
When did you have your last drink?
My last drink. So the last drink was, most people have heard this story before, I'm sure, but for anyone who's new to the podcast, I was given a copy of Claire Pooley's book, The Sober Diaries, because we were going to be interviewing Claire on BBC Radio 2 on January the 2nd, 2018. I'll always remember it. And I was given that, and you'll know as a journalist, I don't know if it's the same in print journalism, but certainly in radio, you tend to get the book the day before if you're lucky. You don't get a long time to research this stuff. So, but on this occasion, because it was Christmas, I was given the book with 2 full weeks to read it. And I remember the producer handing it to me. I looked at the title and I thought, oh, wow, this is the universe telling me something here. And so I literally had the whole of the Christmas period to read it. Now, of course, I didn't start reading it before Christmas. I'm not that bonkers, you know, because I knew that that book was going to do something. So I didn't read it until after Christmas. And then I did. And when I read that book, something clicked, because this was a person just like me who had children, who had a busy life, who was caught in the alcohol trap, but not at rock bottom, but had gone through the tough bit. And there was this seemingly much brighter life on the other side. And I just sort of thought, well, at the very least, I just got to do Dry January. I've at least got to interview Claire and tell her I'm doing Dry January. So I had my last drink on December the 30th. I didn't even bother to wait for January. And of course, it was easy because I just told her, you know, I just said I'll drive to the New Year's Eve party and it wasn't a problem. It was a problem after that. Things got much tougher. But to start with, that was my decision. And so, yeah, so just over 3 years ago.
Tell me about this brighter life on the other side. What is there?
Yeah. What? How have I found this better life to be? Yeah. Well, you know, I think the reason it's so difficult for people to catch sight of this is because so many of us are locked into these kind of cycles of feeling stressed and tired and emotional and anxious, and then it all repeats, and then we have feelings that we don't like very much, so we numb them out with booze again, and it's one long kind of hamster wheel, and feeling fearful, and I remember that, you know, I remember back now that I had one friend who wasn't a drinker. She'd never been a drinker. And I used to think, how bizarre, what a funny thing. You must be missing out on so much of life. Like, how bizarre. And yet when I actually think back, she was always the one having great fun. And we'd go out somewhere And I'd be, you know, really chomping at the bit, you know, to get my glass of wine. Whereas she was very happy to make conversation and have a lemonade or whatever she had. And then she would be suggesting that we went ice skating or, you know, let's gather your kids together and why don't we go bowling? Or, you know, I tell you what, I'm going camp. Do you want to come camping? And I remember thinking, well, why do you want to do that? I'm not going to be able to get a decent glass of wine if I get the ice rink, you know. And when I look back now, she was the one having the fun, you know. This nonsense around, you know, when you're sober, anagram of bores. No, it's actually the opposite that's true. It's the opposite that's true.
Yeah, I think people are really worried that they are going to stop having fun. And, you know, books about stopping drinking alcohol during lockdown might sort of might make people think, well, hang on a minute, life's difficult enough. If we give up alcohol, it's going to be even harder.
Yeah, well, this is why I never use the phrase giving up, right? Unless it's a slip of the tongue. I never use that phrase. The strap line of the book is ditch the booze and take control of your life. And the reason I never use the phrase is because that's the bit we need to reframe, because you are literally not giving anything up. You're only gaining. So if lockdown is hard and, you know, people have got very, very, very difficult and very real stress in their lives, which I 100%, you know, my heart absolutely goes out to people who are trying to, you know, work from home and homeschool and just everything. It's just a nightmare for some people. I know that. But it's a little bit like, you know, there is a fire. There is a fire just starting to set into your property. And what you do by drinking is just pour some petrol on it, right? Whereas what you really need to do is put the goddamn fire out, find another way, you know. The answer's never in a bottle. So I totally understand people that say that because it's all they know right now. And it's all I knew. It was the only way I knew to, it was the only way I knew to take care of myself, or so I thought. I thought it was a treat. I thought it was self-care. I now know that that's just nonsense. It's an illusion. The emperor is not wearing any clothes. There are no benefits to alcohol. None at all, ever.
What I noticed about your book is it's full, absolutely jam-packed full of wonderful things, ranging from helpful techniques, exercise, nutrition, loads of different things. So was this a deliberate thing? It's not a book about having willpower to give up drinking. What is it about?
Yeah, absolutely not. I wanted to have that my first section in the book, which is aimed at those people who are in the early stages, to help them get through those early weeks in a much easier way than I did. So how to balance the brain chemistry, how to get through this period of time, gather your sober toolkit, do all of those bits that will help you get the buzz without the booze. You know, that's my expression. So that's the first part of the book, which, by the way, if you are working on any other behavior change, the principles actually apply. So if you are already sober, but you want to ditch sugar or whatever it might be, then the principles will apply. So that's the first section of the book. But the other section of the book, which, as you say, is massive, covers so many different topics. And the reason for that is because that's my thing. My thing is holistic living. And I've been writing books for years. I've written 5 books and I run a website called Imperfectly Natural. And it's all about the holistic picture. And, you know, the funny thing is, over the years, so many people have said to me, you know, you'd be so much more successful if you just niched down. If you just wrote about natural skincare and beauty, that's one of the things I talk about a lot. You know, you'd be so successful. Why don't you have your own natural skincare range? And then you can just focus everything on that. And then you'll be really, really successful. And then people have hired me to come and speak. And I'll go and speak at an event. And the title of the talk will be, you know, is your skincare making you sick? Right. And they've hired me to speak about skincare. So I'll do my talk about skincare. At the end, I can't stop myself. I have to say, having said all of that, it doesn't matter what you put on your skin if then your nutrition isn't right and your gut health isn't right. And you know what? If your gut health is right and your skincare is right, it doesn't really matter if what's going on in your head isn't sorted. And then it depends what you're washing your clothes in. And you know what I mean? So I can't do it. I have to look at the holistic picture because everything impacts on everything else. And that's why I just thought I can't write a book about ditching the booze. I can only write a book about health and well-being generally, underpinned by ditching the booze, because that for me was that missing piece of the whole health and wellbeing jigsaw.
What I love is the bit, Janie, about giving up alcohol is better than Botox, that it's an anti-aging thing, that you'll look younger when you give up alcohol. Is that right?
It's absolutely. Well, you know something, I don't care. The beautiful thing is, when you stop drinking, you start to like yourself more, right? And when you start to like yourself more, you care less about other people's reactions. That doesn't mean that you don't take care of yourself. I think if anything, you do. But I think, you know, there's probably a scientific approach to this, where if you did an actual scientific study on the, is it called the telomeres? I'm not scientific enough to know, but, you know, those things that control our aging process. I'm absolutely convinced that you would find that when you don't drink, you lengthen your telomeres. Is that what we want? We want longer ones, I think. I could be wrong, don't quote me. But anyway, whichever way the telomeres are meant to go, I'm sure they do when you don't drink. But also, it stands to reason that if you're not pouring toxic liquid in your body, of course your skin is going to be clearer. Your eyes are going to be brighter. You're going to tone up a little bit. You're not going to be as bloated. You know, of course everything is going to get better. I mean, sober hair, who knew? So yeah, that's my excuse. I'm getting younger every year. On a serious note, the really cool thing is that I am no longer afraid of getting older. And that's the important bit. For someone in my industry, you know, in the kind of media world, it's like you get to a certain age and you think, oh my God, well, what's left? I'm just going to get older, grayer. I'm probably, in my case, I'm not naturally particularly slim. I'm just going to put a load of weight on. I'm going to have a lot less energy. My hair is going to go ragged and gray and dry, and my eyes, and just on and on and on. Everything is going to go south, right? And then you think, well, I used to think to myself, well, what can I do? You know, what can I do about it? I suppose I could go on a diet, but we know they don't work, right? You just put the weight back on. And I suppose I could try and do loads more exercise. Well, that doesn't really work for me. And I suppose I could have Botox, but my God, I'm meant to be completely natural in everything I do. So that doesn't sit right. You know, it took years before the answer dawned on me. Well, how about trying to give up the booze? Ditch the booze, sweetie. See how that pans out. And the answer is, I feel younger. I feel so much younger. And I genuinely feel I get younger every year, because everything gets a bit better all the time.
I think one of the things that I found really helpful were the experts that you walked into the book. And I just wondered if you could mention a couple of the experts and what they have to teach us.
Yeah, I really wanted to do this, and I had to have a little bit of a think about it and a conversation with the publisher, you know, because obviously, you know, I'm an interviewer and I love getting other people's opinions. And my whole podcast is obviously, you know, amazing expert after amazing expert sharing their story. And so I had to really think, okay, well, do I want this book to just be a whole series of essays by other people? And how do we make it work? And in the end, I just figured, well, what this boils down to is I want to share lots of different aspects of health and well-being that I believe many people, once they've ditched the booze, are interested in. Not necessarily all at once, you know, you can dip into it. But I've met so many people through the Sober Club who, once they've stopped drinking, really care about nutrition. They really want to look at it. They really start to care about how they're going to manage anxiety and depression. They really start to care about fitness and yoga. They become interested in meditation, even if they never have before. They start to care about how they can reframe their limiting beliefs. And that's a big one, right? And then they start to consider their own creativity, which is something they never thought about before. You know, all this time that you get on your hands when you no longer drink. And then some of them start to think about their own sense of purpose. What's going to be next for my life? So I figured, well, with all these topics, of course I can share my own experience, but why not just get the experts in? So I've got, you know, some amazing people in the book who've been kind enough to contribute, like Dr. Gemma Newman, the plant power doctor, has written a great piece for us. Dr. Hannah Short has done a piece on with some tips on the menopause. Then I've got people like Neil Shah from the Stress Management Society talking about really practical ways on how you can deal with anxiety and stress. And then there's Joe DeRosa with a chapter on meditation and breathing techniques. We've got a shaman talking about how you can make your own cacao ceremony. Andy Coley, Joe Wilson on NLP. We've got an EFT master. And so it goes on. And I think it was a great, in the end, looking back, I think it was a great thing to do. You know, to actually bring in some of these experts, give them a little section to really tell it like it is. And what's quite interesting is, you know, the editor kind of said at one point, you know what it's like when you have a book editor, you know, Pam, you've written books, and the editor will come back and ask you questions, and you kind of think to yourself, oh, and she came back and said, oh, in this section on the menopause, your experts contradicting each other, so which one do you want? And I said, I want both. I absolutely want to bring two different views, and then women can look at this and then go off and do their own research. So, yeah. So there are loads of great people in there, and I'm very grateful to them.
And you've got recipes for mocktails.
Yeah, lovely recipes. Well, yes, I'm sure, you know, as you'll be well aware, my mantra, keep the ritual, change the ingredients. It is the key to success for many people, because I do believe that if it's your thing that you have a drink at the end of a busy day, then for God's sake, have a drink at the end of a busy day. What's the problem? You know, if that's what we want to do, it's fine. But keep that ritual, drink with your partner or your friends or whoever it is, but have a lovely glass, but just have something alcohol free in it. And fortunately, of course, the world has changed, and we now have the most incredible array of drinks possible. And so, yeah, I've got some really nice recipes. Again, I've got a couple of people contributing. Camille de Vidal from La Maison Wellness has contributed one of her mocktail recipes, or alcohol-free cocktail recipes. And then there's a bunch of stuff around drinks and some, you know, very simple drinks that you can make, and of course juicing. I've got a whole section on juicing, which again is something that a lot of people get into if they want to kind of kickstart a bit of a health kick, is you know, add a smoothie or a juice into your day, because nobody fancies a glass of wine after a dark green smoothie, let me tell you.
Okay. And what about support? You mentioned in the book telling people, getting support, finding a tribe. We're not necessarily talking about going to AA, but you run the Sober Club, of which I'm a member, and it's been brilliant to connect with so many like-minded people. So how important is it to have that sort of support around you, especially if your family still drink?
Yeah, I think it's massively important. I think that at the beginning, it's important to tell someone, but not necessarily your family, because they don't necessarily understand what you've been through or why you're doing this. And I think sometimes people launch in too quickly and try and have these in-depth discussions or arguments, one might say, with their partner or close family, and end up getting talked out of it before they start, because somebody who has not been through this is not in the same place. And, you know, if I'd have told my husband, I didn't actually tell anyone. And that was a mistake. Well, I did tell Claire. I told Claire Pooley. But apart from that, I didn't tell anyone. And that wasn't necessarily the right thing to do. But if I'd told my family, they would have immediately said, well, you're not that bad. You know, just have one. And I'd have been back where I started before you know it. So I actually had to connect with people who really know that I can't just have one, who really understand that. Why would you even want one? You know, that's the inspiration you need. So getting that inspiration and that connectivity is massive. And, you know, we know this phrase, the opposite of addiction is connection. It really, really is. And so, you know, running the Sober Club is it's just the most fantastic thing that I've ever done, really, because it's really an optimum health and wellbeing club. That's what it's really about. But it's underpinned by sobriety. And the beautiful thing about it is that people join and they're day one, you know, or they've gone back to day one, and then there's someone in the club who's been sober for 5 years, and everyone supports each other, and it's that connectivity with people who understand. It's really critical, and it doesn't matter where you find your support, but find it. really find it. You know, some people, you know, really want that face-to-face meeting. I don't know how much of that is going on right now. But there's always help available. No one should ever try and do this completely on their own. You know, it's that coal thrown out of fire. You know, in time, you're going to need some other coals.
I think also that what I loved about your book is the way you make being alcohol-free seem so cool. It's the cool thing to do, the cool thing to be. And it's a it's such a positive book. If there's one thing you'd like your readers to take away from the book, what would it be, do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it comes back to that line that I think I possibly even open a chapter with, which is, if only someone had told me just how freaking fantastic life without the booze really is. That's what it comes down to. Because in all the years I was held back, whenever I mentioned booze to anyone, if I you know, spoke to a doctor or a therapist or anyone about my concern that I might be drinking too much, the answer was always, well, just reduce it a bit, or just have one, or have an alcohol-free day. And the feeling was one of, oh, poor you, you know, you can't hold your beer very well. That's a shame for you, because alcohol's so marvelous. And oh, it must be a little awkward for you if you can't quite get it right. You know, that was kind of the vibe. Nobody ever said, I tell you what, you want to try having none. It's unreal. It is a fantastic life without any. Nobody had ever said that to me. The first time I'd ever come across that concept was Claire Pooley's book. It really was. Of course I knew of people that didn't drink, but when you think of the people who don't drink, like particularly if you were thinking of kind of celebrities, you tend to think to yourself, they had to stop because they were alcoholics and they had to stop. And now they're grateful that they stopped because they didn't want to die, but it wouldn't have been their choice, right? And that's a very different take on it. So my focus is, it doesn't matter how much you're drinking. Don't wait till you get to rock bottom. Why would you want to hang on to something that has zero benefits when life without it is so amazing?
Well, I think your book is going to be one that I dip in and out of with great regularity, because just you read one bit and you think, oh, that's great. And then you sort of dip into another bit, and it's just going to keep me occupied for a long time. I think it's a great book, Janie. So well done and congratulations.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you. And I appreciate someone like you, you know, being willing to interview me, but also to read it. Because you never know, do you? You never know what your book's actually like. You never know till it comes out. And hopefully you will be able to dip into it. Because as I say, with all the different aspects of health and well-being and the different writers in there, you might not be ready right at this point to have a cacao ceremony, but maybe at some point in the future, right? So you can dip in. that's the nice bit. You know, I'm actually dipping into it because I'm reading some of the stuff that other people have written again. So yeah, it is great. And, you know, just to pick up on that last piece I was just saying, what is great is that there are so many quick lit books around now, and there are so many great podcasts, and there are so many people now talking about this stuff that hopefully there won't be many people who are stuck the way I was for so many years, because they'll get to hear about this one way or another. You know, they'll hear me or another quick lit author or podcast host talk about this. And it's the more people that catch on to this choice to be alcohol free, and just how amazing life is, you know, the better it'll be for everyone, really. So it's this thing of kind of all ships rise in high tide. And so it's nice to be in that community and actually have a book out. When I think back to the fact that one book changed my life, wow, if I could do that for just one person, it'd be amazing.
Oh, you will. I'm sure about that.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you for interviewing me. And tell me just what's going on for you, because you've got a book out, haven't you? Tell us about your book.
Well, mine's a novel, and it's based in the world of celebrity, and it's called Someone Like Me. because it's about somebody that thinks that exciting things can't happen to ordinary people. And guess what? They do. So that's the one that I've got out at the moment. I'm writing another one. But my main work is interviewing celebrities and people like you. And it's been
excellent.
A great pleasure. Thank you.
Brilliant. So thank you for doing that interview with me, Pam. Check out Pam's work. She's a celebrity interviewer, as you know, and also her novel. And thank you for the kind words you said about the Sober Club, Pam. It really is the place to find your connection. And, you know, we've just had some amazing stuff in the Sober Club lately. Of course, we have our community, and that's where a lot of the magic happens when people connect with each other. And they are super supportive and totally non-judgmental. I do feel very blessed to have that community. And you'd be so welcome to join us if that's where you're at. And that, by the way, can be day one right through to year six. But it isn't just the online community. We do have a whole member portal of videos, of amazing content, of just so much stuff in there across all kinds of areas, really. Just like the book, I go in, you know, we go into everything, nutrition and fitness and relationships and creativity and finding your purpose and mindset, meditation, and on and on. And we have some amazing guests as well coming and joining us for Zoom sessions. We have catch-ups and socials, but we also have some great guests, including an expert on grief, which a few members had asked about that. And I thought, wow, it's a great idea. So I'm actually going to be bringing you that guest as a podcast interview as well. But we had the opportunity to do a Q&A in the Sober Club. We're going to be talking about money mindset and our limiting beliefs around money. I was talking earlier about how so many people have got, you know, they've got the inner critic going on. They don't feel they're enough. They won't find it easy to love themselves first this Valentine's Day. It's the title of one of my blogs. They won't find that easy at all. You know, often that comes down to limiting beliefs, and they're around all kinds of things, not least money and how deserving we are of abundance and finances and the work that we want to do. So I think that's going to be really interesting as well. That's with Joseph James, who was one of my panel guests, by the way, last week. I don't know if anyone was able to join us for The Best You. It was a great event, albeit online. Would have been lovely to have been on a big stage, but it was great. I did my talk, Happy, Healthy, Sober, and then the panel was fantastic fun on the Sunday with William Porter and Dr. Enid Taylor and Joseph James and Amanda from Naughty. And we had a really good chat about whether being sober brings you superpowers. And of course, we weren't being literal. It didn't necessarily mean that you suddenly be able to, you know, walk on water or practice telepathy. But definitely, you know, exaggerations of normal behavior. I think that's also one of the definitions of superpowers. And we most certainly have that. And we most certainly get the resilience and that kind of springboard and sense of mojo to be able to do things that, actually do feel like a superpower. Some of us are just absolutely incredulous at what we've managed to achieve once we ditch the booze, you know, the 2 6 o'clocks in one day. Who knew? So check out the Sober Club. It's thesoberclub.com. You're very welcome to join us if you're day one or sober curious, or if you're on year six, because it's, you know, all about the what's next. It's all about the upscaling. Back on the book, of course, I would love it if you would grab a copy. You can get a signed copy if you'd like one. If you go to thesoberclub.com, you can buy a signed copy there, but sadly only if you're in the UK. We can only ship to the UK at the moment. And also, there's a competition to win a book and a whole bunch of supplements. I've teamed up with Dr. Marilyn Glenville from the Natural Health Practice because, you know, I just realised, you know, we interviewed her on the podcast, as you know, a few weeks ago. And so many people are struggling in those early weeks and months to get that brain chemistry piece right. So I thought, team up with Marilyn and let's have a look at some of the supplements that she offers that are really great for those early stages, whatever's going on. But of course, she has a whole range, and I've got a discount code on soberclub.com that you can have a look at and get a discount on products from Marilyn's site if you use that code. But also, we've got a competition to give, I think, is it 4 or 5 well-chosen supplements, the supplements that will work fantastically well for if you're in the early stages or if you know you're at the stage where you want to balance that brain chemistry. So check that out. The supplements and the signed book are worth well over 100 quid. So it's a nice competition. I've also got some fantastic competitions to win alcohol-free drinks. So, you know, you've got to be in it to win it. Have a go. We've got some Slangevar to give away. We're going to have some Jimba to give away very soon. Looking forward to that. I think we've got some Wilfreds to give away, or we will have very soon. There may still be the competition to win some Naughty if it's not closed yet. Have a look. There's a whole bunch of great competitions. So make sure that you're in the frame, as it were. Whatever you're doing, look after yourself. If you've done this very hard thing, maybe you did dry Jan and you're now well into February, pat yourself on the back. What an amazing thing you're doing. Best thing you'll ever do for yourself. And always reach out if you're struggling. You know where to find me. I'm very easily findable on social media. There's always someone out there who can help you in Happy Healthy Sober. I give lots of references and lots of contacts and suggestions. Because, you know, there's not always one way to do stuff, right? People like to connect in different ways. So check out the book and obviously have a look at the Sober Club if that's something of interest. I've got some great guests coming up in the next few weeks. Super exciting. Don't know if I'm going to tell you about them all yet, though, because I need to make sure that they actually come off the page. I was super lucky. I got some great words of praise, lines of praise, whatever you call it, for the book. A really lovely line from Annie Grace saying how much she loved the book, and Joe Wood, and who else? Claire Pooley, William Porter, who obviously contributed a section as well. Eric Sigmund, that was great to get a line of endorsement from Eric Sigmund, and Dr. Gemma Newman, who again contributed to the book, who is definitely going to be one of my podcast guests. So I can definitely tell you about that one. So whatever you're doing, give yourself a massive hug. Enjoy Valentine's Day, but focus on loving yourself first. See you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.